tune for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with Tara Connor Jones. Tara is here in Sarasota as part of the ensemble company of How I Got Over, a tribute to Mahalia Jackson. So, not only will you hear Tara talk about the show, you will also hear Tara tell you the story of how she got over, which is to say, how she became the performer that she is, what obstacles she faced to achieve this goal, which she discovered so early in life, and finally has now been able to embrace to her and our enjoyment. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from
to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. That is, being the person that you would have been if you had never had an experience in your early life that suggested that something about you was not okay. Too many of us have had experiences in childhood that suggested that something that we were, some way that we looked or talked or acted or laughed, some interest that we had or curiosity, some tendency that we had, was not acceptable, didn't bring the result, the response that we would have wanted. And in fact, in many cases brought results and responses and consequences that we absolutely did not want to have. Anything from the rolling of the eyes to the turning away to criticism, teasing, punishment. And when a young child gets a response that tells them that this thing that they did or were or wanted was going to bring a consequence that they really didn't want, then that child inevitably begins to back away from that, whatever it is, in whatever way that they can. As a therapist, I have seen this over and over and over again. Children who got angry or scared or cried or laughed too loud and were told that that was an unattractive quality and they shouldn't do it. Or, quite often, children who reached for something or wanted something or asked for something and were told that wanting that was not all right and that they shouldn't make those wants known. So these children tried not to laugh or cry or get angry or want. And cleverly, as we have been designed, so many of us were able to arrive at adulthood actually forgetting that we were ever these things, that we ever could do these things, that we ever wanted these things, and therefore distanced from the person we really are. Well, when you are distanced from the person you really are, even though you no longer bring down those consequences, there are other consequences. There is the consequence of feeling that there is something flawed or bad or wrong with you, even though you may not know what it is. There is a consequence of not actually being the person you really are. So the Lynn Show is about saying that while this happens to so many people, if it happened to you, if you have the sense that there was something that you wanted to do, wanted to be, or even that there is something that you'd like to be that you're not, maybe you learned not to ask for what you wanted, and now you can see that that has damaged you. And maybe even you recognize that there's nothing wrong with wanting, you just can't find it inside yourself. Well, again, the Lynn Show is about saying that it may not be too late to recover what you were forced to lose, or as we therapists say, are now in denial for. So, if you have some questions about it, how that can be done, you can find me at my website, thelynnshow.com. That's thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. There's a button to click that says email me, and you can click on that and ask me any questions that you like. You can get a copy of my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can even get me to come and talk to your group or organization. In my shows, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. Because at least in their work, that is absolutely true. The interview that I'm playing today is with Kara Connor Jones, who, as I said in the run-up, is currently in the production of How I Got Over at West Coast Black Theater Troupe. Tara's story is interesting because Tara discovered very, very young, and you'll hear her tell how, that singing was what she was meant to do. But, like so many of us, she took the advice of those people who thought they knew better and spent the lion's share of her life doing something other than singing, even while she managed to get involved in theater on the side. It took her a long time to get back to it, but now she is back to it. And as I said, when you listen to someone who is giving their life to their art, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And that is so true of Tara. So here, in her own words, Tara Connor Jones. Okay, so I'm here with Tara Connor Jones. And I'm talking to Tara because she's here performing in How I Got Over, a tribute to Mahalia Jackson. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Oh, wow.
Well, you're smiling. It's clearly you.
It is.
It's clearly you. Right, right, right. The art to which you are giving your life is performing, acting, singing. Well, how you define yourself?
It's a combination of all those things. I guess I would consider myself an entertainer.
An entertainer.
I sing, I act, I move well. I won't consider myself a dancer, but I move well. I do a bit of film. I dabbled in that last year, and that was a load of fun. I minister at churches through singing as well as the spoken word. Mm-hmm. So you're a variety of
right.
Things.
Yeah. So you're on stage a lot.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Good. So I only ask one question, and this is it. Do you remember the very first moment in your life when entertaining in whatever way seemed to call you, draw you, be attractive, right?
I would say I was about 11 or 12 years old. I attended a small Baptist church, and we received a new pastor. And he was very young and handsome, and all of us little girls were falling over our new pastor. And I remember he drove the Regal, and it was just fabulous. And we hadn't seen a pastor drive a Regal. He was young and fancy.
You might say, was regal.
Yeah, exactly. I was singing in the Sunshine Choir like everyone else, just because I was told to, not because I thought I could sing. And he heard me one Sunday and thought I had a gift. He was a wonderful singer himself, still is. And we had a program. He gave me a solo. It was the hymn, Give Me a Clean Heart. Mm. I was so afraid, and I got up in front of the church, and while singing the song, I noticed the response of the audience. And it was the most incredible feeling, and I knew from that day that I was supposed to sing. I was supposed to share this with someone, because if it made people feel that way, even as a little girl, I knew that this is what I'm supposed to do.
Wow. Okay.
So that's where it started.
You're saying you were 12 or 13?
11 or 12.
11 or 12. Right. I got that wrong. What's so interesting to me about this is that it wasn't the singing, because you were already singing and that hadn't captured you. It was the recognition that you had an impact.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah. I saw people weep.
My goodness.
I saw pride in my grandmother's face. My grandmother was a fabulous singer. And I thought, oh my God.
Literally, right?
And I knew, without really knowing what it actually meant to have an impact, because I was a little girl.
Right.
And little girls were different then. Mm-hmm. 11 was different then than it is now.
It was a lot younger.
I was truly naive, yeah, I guess you would say. I just knew that something happened.
Yes.
And it was something that was different.
Well, and you remember it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you were little and it was a long time ago, but you can still, when you talk about it, you can still see that in a sense, you're reliving it, right?
My mom kept the cassette tape for years.
Wow.
Notice cassette tape.
Yeah.
Who has them anymore?
Yeah, she couldn't play it anymore anyway, even if she had
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Right.
So that was truly amazing. And from that moment, I started singing more in the school chorus.
Well, this is my next question. So did you think to yourself, well, I want to do a little more of this, so you signed up for chorus, or you...
I did. I signed up for chorus.
Right.
Just as a dibble and dabble.
Yeah.
I ended up getting into junior high school. Never forget a teacher named Ann Chapman. I don't even know if she's still out there. I was in the ninth grade, junior high school. And we were singing a piece, don't remember what it was, but I sang the wrong note. And she stopped everybody and said, who did that? And of course, I thought, well, I'm not saying a thing. I don't even know what I did. And she says, who did that? And so after a while, everybody pointed at me because she was very serious.
Right.
And she says, do that again. And I was like, do what? She said, hit that high C again. And I did. And she said, oh my God. And so she started to mentor me a bit after that, because she felt like, if you have that kind of range in the ninth grade.
Right. Without trying.
Right.
Right.
She says, let me help you. So she did. And I ended up getting into the art school for high school.
How did she help you?
We had after school rehearsals.
Oh, she really worked with you.
She really did.
She worked with you by yourself?
By myself after school. She gave me more solo parts. her thing at the time was she started giving me a lot of the spirituals because she felt like I had a Jesse Norman voice. Mm-hmm. And so that's what she started mentoring me with. She would say, well, I want you to learn this music. And she would teach it to me and we would perfect it. And I never sang publicly with it that I can remember, but she just took time enhancing what she thought was already there.
Okay, I want to stop just to make this point. I always do when it comes up like this, mm-hmm. the significance of teachers. I hear story after story mm-hmm. of kids who had no idea they had talent, who maybe were so shy they couldn't talk, but a teacher saw something and commented on it and drew it out, and now they have a life based on that, you know. So I always want to make that point. And in your case, you had the pastor, then you had the teacher. You just had a lot of people saying, you, you know.
And those teachers followed me.
Really?
When I say those teachers followed me, everywhere I went, there was a teacher or a principal.
Oh, my.
That poured into me. It was a principal in high school. She's deceased now, Mary Frances Whitaker.
How did she find you?
She was the principal of the art school.
I jumped ahead. So are you saying that it was special to get into the art school that you had?
Yes.
Right, yeah, I missed that entirely.
We had to audition. It was similar to Fame.
Yes. Auditioned. So this is what you said, Ann Chapman, is that what you said her name was?
Chapman, yes.
Yeah. So she was grooming you mm-hmm. to get into the art school.
I didn't know it at the time, but absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I used some of that material for my audition. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how big of a thing it was then because that was the first year. It was 1986 was the year it opened.
Oh, my goodness.
And, I just may have told my age a bit. But that's the year it opened. So mm-hmm. I auditioned. I got in as a 10th grader. The principal, Mary Frances Whitaker, fabulous lyrical soprano who was a lover of the arts as well as an educator, and she heard me and asked me to come to take music lessons. She provided music lessons at First Baptist Church downtown in Jacksonville.
Now, are we talking here about singing or are we talking about
singing.
Theory? And no, right?
Singing.
Just singing, right?
And
everybody wants to teach you.
Yeah. And I didn't have the money, and my mother didn't have the money. My mom was a registered nurse, mm-hmm. and it was just she and I. She worked double shifts to make sure I had absolutely everything a daughter could want. But that was
more than she could do.
Right. And I remember, I'm about to cry, because that was special. I remember Miss Whitaker saying, just get her to the church. You don't have to pay me a dime.
I'm crying.
Because I feel like she has a real talent that can be brought out with help.
Yeah.
And I went to her, I want to say, every Thursday at 6. And I would rehearse with Ms. Whitaker from around 6 to 7:30 every week. She would work with me. She would help me on technique. She would do exercises to extend my range. She did everything I would have had I gone to a music teacher.
That's right. Absolutely. Right.
She introduced me to other great people in music. Dr. William Brown, he is deceased also, but he was a premier opera singer who ended up teaching and doing work at the University of North Florida many, many years ago. And I ended up working with him and had an opportunity to sing with him.
Because she introduced you to him?
Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
They had sang together years ago.
This is really a your being led thing, right?
My steps have been ordered by God from the very beginning.
Yeah, that's really what it sounds like.
And the funny thing about that is I'm learning as I mature, you don't realize that until you get older.
Yeah, and you look back.
Exactly.
And you see how it went, right. No, you were just following. You were just going with mm-hmm. what was next, right?
With what was next.
Okay, so at any point here in junior high school, in art school, did you think, I'm making a life of this?
Yeah, it was always my plan to make a life of this.
Okay, so you knew all along that this was what you wanted.
All along I knew this was what I wanted. I just knew. It was like I had been bitten by the bug. I did my first show at 16.
In school?
It was actually outside of school. It was at a theater called River City Playhouse in Jacksonville. The theater doesn't exist anymore, but they did Ain't Misbehaving.
Oh.
And I remember being afraid because everyone else in the cast were 20 and older.
Well, wait a minute. You auditioned for it.
Mm-hmm.
What made you audition for it?
Somebody mentioned it. I want to say there was a flyer going around the school, and somebody said, you should audition. And I had never auditioned.
I was just going to say,
auditioning for the school.
Right.
And I went. I don't remember what I sang or anything, but I got the part. It was that summer. I was 16.
Oh, my God.
And I remember I played the character Amelia, and one of her songs is Squeeze Me.
Oh, and I remember, goodness.
Yeah. Being embarrassed.
Oh, my goodness. You were so young for that.
Singing that with my mother in the
audience. Yeah, right.
So I keep telling people what I would do to play that role again. I could really sing that now.
Right, right. Well, you could know what it meant now.
Right.
Right, right, right.
So I've always known. I ended up getting out of high school. I wanted to go straight to New York City. My mother, who did what I think parents from her era knew to do, and that was you get a career, you get a college education.
Right, you got to back something to fall back on.
And that was her point. She said, you need to get a college education, because what if your voice doesn't work one day? You still have to eat. You still have to take care of yourself.
Right.
And so I decided, can't be that hard. I'll go for education. And I ended up getting a degree in elementary education.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught.
Mm-hmm.
For 19 years.
Really?
I did theater on the side all those 19 years. My plan was, okay, well, to satisfy my mom, do this for 7 years. It's my plan B. It was like, just do it for 7 years. 7 years turned into 19. Last year was my final assignment.
Oh my goodness!
In fall of 2013, a dear sister of mine, Angela Robinson, sent me a text message and said, the Alhambra is doing The Color Purple. That's my home theater. It's a dinner theater in Jacksonville. Never had worked there. I didn't think I was good enough to work there. They had, like, big people from New York. I worked at community theater.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you should go for the audition. I'm going to call Todd, who's the director, and ask him if he will hear you.
So yet again, said, right?
Yet again, a text message.
Yeah, right.
And I tell her all the time, one text message started all of this.
Changed your life.
Changed my life.
Yeah.
I went for the audition. Todd, who I affectionately call Pops now, lost it after the audition. And he said, for heaven's sake, where have you been?
I knew it.
Have you been in Jacksonville all this time? Why haven't I heard of you? And he ended up casting me in The Color Purple. That was my first professional show
right.
with a professional theater, which happened of March of 2014.
Oh, my God. And yet again, you're not planning this.
Nope.
No.
I really went to the audition because I did not want to let my friend down.
Right, right.
She had put her name out there.
Right.
She had made a call to him. I thought to myself, I can't not go.
Right.
I have to go to the audition. And I have to do reasonably well so that it's not
She's
an
not
embarrassment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. He hired me. He gave me in the one run of that show such an amazing acting class, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you never had any acting. You didn't study acting in college.
Did not. He would say things to me like, you have an amazing set of chops, kid.
You need to learn some technique.
Right. And he even felt like I had a lot of natural mm-hmm. ability.
Right.
He says, but I can help you. And he would tweak here and he would tweak there. And by the time it was done, it was wonderful. Then he hired me for the next show, which was Shrek the Musical. And he told me, he says, now I'm going to tell you, you're going to work your butt off.
Mm-hmm.
I was three characters. I was Mama Ogre, Mama Bear, and Dragon. And for that show, which happened last summer, he offered my equity card as a part of my contract.
Oh, my God.
I was ending up the school year. during all of this. Mind you, I worked. The Color Purple, we did 8 shows a week.
Yay!
2 shows on Saturday, 2 shows on Sunday, and then Tuesday through Friday. And I was still working every day from 7:50 until 4, 5 o'clock.
Run into the theater.
Time, right. And then heading to
grab
the theater.
Grab something to eat, run to the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those voice lessons then must have stood you in good stead, because it's hard to do 8 shows.
It is. It's very hard. You have to definitely pace yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I did Shrek, we were into the summer, and I had made the decision. Kind of sat back and looked at everything, and I said, you know, I feel like this is God. I feel like there's a light flashing saying this is the time to go.
Yeah.
Take the leap. And all of my friends kept telling me, you should leap.
Yeah.
Because you're really good. And if it doesn't work,
so
you can always come back to teaching. You have a valid certificate.
Right.
You'll never know if you don't try it. You should do it.
Wow.
And I turned in my letter of resignation.
Holy cow.
And scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Todd saying to me, quote, you have a set of balls. But I believe you can work.
Wow.
He says, I believe you can work as much as you want to work.
Oh, my God.
And I have not stopped working. It's the most amazing thing. I've had maybe 3 months that I did not have a show.
Jesus. Well, you probably needed those 3 years.
So it has been amazing. It has been an amazing journey. It has been a testament of faith.
Yes.
It has been lessons learned. One of the biggest lessons I've learned is that God will take care of you.
If you let.
Yeah.
If you trust, right?
Trust, mm-hmm. And relax.
Right.
And I work on that daily.
Well,
just
I mean,
relaxing.
Yeah, well, because...
You make me cry.
You make me cry. Are you kidding? The conventional wisdom, what the culture tells us, is not to trust, mm-hmm. You know, to be scared, to be vigilant,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So you have an interesting conundrum. You know, you have your history, which just is loaded with, what, are you going to trust? I mean, here I'm here, and I'm here, and I'm here. And, you know, and every place you go, somebody comes in to help you, push you, direct you, encourage you, right? But then you have, on the other hand, the conventional wisdom, which is, are you crazy?
Exactly. Because I thought to myself, maybe I'm having a midlife crisis.
Right.
Like, I should ask my friends, am I having a midlife crisis? They're like, absolutely not. This is what you were born to do, nut. And I'm like, are you sure? Like, because I think you don't know if you're crazy, but your friends can tell. They're like, heck no. Go.
Wow.
And then and that brought me to Sarasota.
Oh, tell me.
I saw auditions posted on the website. I had heard about Nate Jacobs probably for the last 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend who said, I'm going to try and put you in touch with him. Never happened. So when I saw it pop up, I thought, oh my gosh, I have to go.
Mm-hmm.
Made a phone call. It's another one of those moments. Made a phone call, got my audition time. At the time, I was in that transition. I was in that moment where I felt like, maybe this wasn't the best idea. I don't even know where I'm going to stay. I don't even have the money to get a hotel room. So I put out I started making some calls from college people that maybe are in this area that I could just stay the night with. And one of those friends said to me, you know, I'm supposed to help you on this leg of the journey.
Oh, my God.
She says, I'll call you later with a confirmation number. She bought me a hotel room. So I came here for the audition, ended up getting hired for Black Nativity here.
Oh, my goodness.
What a gift it was for my first professional show on the road. I got to play the Archangel Gabriel and announce the news that a savior is born. And I'm thinking, what could be better than this? And now I'm back.
So are you planning to settle here for a while, or do you know? Or
I don't know right now. I no longer have my mother. So that...
So you're not locked in anywhere.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
I couldn't think of a better way to say that. Right. This is that moment in my life where I feel if there's ever a moment to fly and to fly far away from home.
Yeah. And to set your own roots.
Right.
Wherever, right?
Mr. Jacobs has been a gift. Mm-hmm. He is a gift. Mm-hmm. And I tell him all the time that none of this is new, that he would hear it. He is a divine connection for mm-hmm. me. And I know that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Wow.
Like, I know it here. I can't always express how I know it, but I know that Sarasota is exactly where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be under his tutelage right now.
Yeah. He's the next in line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
You have had a series of amazing teachers. It's true.
I just have a feeling that I will be putting roots down somewhere else.
Yeah.
Where? I don't know.
Well, I don't think you have to know.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that what's supposed to happen for you,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's been your experience, right?
Absolutely.
And it's what I said before about the difficulty between trusting that, even though that's been your experience, and the conventional wisdom, which is, you know, you better figure it out yourself. You know,
which is what I struggle with.
Not only you.
Yeah.
I think not very many people, well, maybe that's not true, because I've heard the story a lot, because I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and a lot of them have had similar experiences of being led, of being helped, of being, right? But I think in the general population, most people don't have this experience. They have the conventional wisdom, which is you better figure it out, but they don't have what you have on the other side, which is, I didn't figure it out. You know, it got figured out for me.
Right.
Right? So it's more complicated or difficult for somebody like you, because you got both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
There's a war.
Yeah. Right. So those people who just have you better be vigilant, they're, you know, it's not as much fun, I think, but they're not conflicted.
So I had the thought yesterday, just thinking ahead, because that's sort of what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I go a year out, which is not always good for someone like me, who also has the, don't worry about it, it's going to work out.
Right.
Yeah, so I was looking ahead thinking, so how am I going to do this then? And I started to be worked up about it, and just as quickly as I got worked up, I could hear the voice saying, why are you worrying about that? Have I ever, like,
failed you?
Exactly.
I know.
And so I took a deep breath and said, all right.
So I ask, well, there's one other thing. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about the way you arrived here or what you've been doing? My God, 2004, you said you did The Color Purple in 2014? Good grief. So what have you done in between then beside this?
I've done The Color Purple, Shrek the Musical, Black Nativity,
mm-hmm.
The Buddy Holly Story. It was the Apollo performer, but I named myself Gussie Pearl Peacock, known as Big Pearl at the Apollo.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a load of fun. Love the pictures because, you know, you had the beehives and all of that stuff. Yeah. And then back here mm-hmm. for the Cotton Club.
Unbelievable.
So after Buddy Holly ended in February, that was my 3-month stretch.
Right.
Where I substitute teach between shows.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Yeah, mommy was right.
Right? Exactly. And I have so many friends that are teachers.
Right.
Until they keep me on their rotating list.
Yes,
I'm sure they do.
I always
have somewhere to work.
Yeah, but yet again, right?
Yet again.
You're just taken care of. It's amazing. So you want to tell me about how I got over?
There are 6 women in this show total, but 4 of us do predominantly the singing. Different times throughout the show, we all are Mahalia Jackson. This musical showcases the music of Mahalia Jackson, Clara Ward and the Clara Ward Singers.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Shirley Caesar and the Caravans. Shirley Caesar, who just got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame a few days ago. So
oh,
way
my.
Cool about that.
Right.
Dorothy Love Coates. She had a singing group back then.
So it's highlighting the gospel music of the 50s and 60s?
Correct.
Yeah, great.
But the main highlight is the music of Mahalia Jackson. So people will definitely hear Mahalia Jackson come mm-hmm. through this show. They will get those songs that we attribute to Mahalia Jackson. You will hear them in this show.
Okay, so I know that Nate put this together, right? Okay. Is there a story?
There is a story. This story is told through the confines of the African-American experience, through where we came from,
mm-hmm.
through the church,
uh-huh.
and abroad. So the music is woven through to tell that story.
Okay, and the women who have the songs, mm-hmm. are you also telling the story? Or is someone else telling the story?
We tell pieces of the story, but there is a primary narrator,
uh-huh.
Brian Boyd,
mm-hmm.
who does quite a bit of the narrating.
He sort of sets up everything.
Correct.
Right? And then you guys sing the songs that are appropriate in the moment.
Right.
Right?
And we have some comedic relief also between myself and one of the other characters, Ariel Azul.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do.
So, this is historically correct, I'm assuming.
It is.
Yeah. Right. So, it's not only as all the WBTT shows are entertaining, but it's also, I don't want to say educational, but informative, no?
Yeah, it's informative of what gospel music was
mm-hmm.
during the 50s and 60s, of what gospel music means in the culture
mm-hmm.
of African Americans, how it has shaped our experiences, how, you know, aptly titled, How I Got Over,
mm-hmm.
how that music is essential to how we as a people have gotten to the place we are today. It's a big show.
Is it?
It's a big show musically as well. I predict that people will leap from their seats. Seriously.
Really?
At the music. It's that kind of music. The gospel music from the 50s and 60s is very different than gospel music as we know it today. And there's something about that music of old that touches you in a place mm-hmm. and it soothes you. It does what no other music can do. So when people hear this music or when they are reminded of that music, it's going to hit them in a very special place, I predict. The rhythm of it on some of the more up-tempo songs,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be able to help but clap or tap your feet or
move.
Right. You're going to have to.
Like, yeah.
There's no way possible. Even in rehearsals, we find it hard to just stand and sing and learn the song. Once we've learned the song, oh my gosh, we're everywhere. Our energy is everywhere because it's that kind of music. It ignites you.
And do you think that was its intention?
I don't know if that was the intention, but...
Do you know what I mean? I mean, when you were talking about the impact that this music had on the African-American community.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered, that was what prompted my question. Did the music, do you think that the music was created to energize, to have an impact that moved people forward? Or do you think it was just an accident?
I don't think it was an accident. I think from what I know of African-American history,
mm-hmm.
Even far beyond my mother and grandmother's generation, music and rhythm has always been a part of us.
Yes.
And it was always used to tell a story. It was used during the times of slavery. But sometimes the singing was a message to those in the field to say, well,
somebody's coming. Yeah.
And so they were like code songs
yeah.
at one point. So I don't think it was an accident. We sang out of our need to sing. It was also a way to express freedom.
Yeah, I got
Even
it.
Even though
yeah.
we didn't feel free for many
You weren't
years,
free, but
we
still
were free.
Yes, when you were singing.
Yeah, it's our roots. It's It's the beat of that drum.
So this is so interesting because it seems to me that if we just follow what you're saying, mm-hmm. which is that the music, which was already natural to the culture, mm-hmm. I imagine that it came from Africa, that the slaves brought it with them.
I would agree with you.
Right, so the rhythm and the music, that came with the culture. It was part of the culture. Mm-hmm. So the people used it, as you say, to send messages mm-hmm. or to comfort or to support.
To lift,
right. Yeah. So they used it. It was what they had.
It
right?
was the common thread yes. that kept them together as a people. It was the common thread that gave them joy in times of sorrow.
Yes.
It was the common thread that gave them hope
yes.
when they had hopeless days.
Yes.
It was music. Yes. It was that thing
yes.
that sometimes you can't put a word to, but that thing, whatever that thing is,
yes.
that's wrapped up in this music, that is what shaped an entire community.
Yeah, I got it. And so then, when African Americans were no longer slaves, this music also winds up in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the same impact, the impact to rise people out of their seats, to
Absolutely.
Move them, to involve them. Everybody gets involved in it, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So I do think that it was intentional to support, to encourage, to move.
And I can't wait to experience the audience
yeah.
for this show.
Yeah.
That's always a treat for the actor that's on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
We love our audiences, especially when they ooze energy.
Mm-hmm.
And
they give it back.
Yeah, that
yeah,
is...
Yeah.
That is the best. I mean, you go out every night to give your 100%, but when you have that audience, you feel like you want to give 1,800%. Like,
yes.
it's over the top. So I can't wait to experience what they experience.
It's
I
lovely.
Really can't.
No, I know you don't. But I know that is who you are anyway.
Well.
Oh, what happened? What were you thinking when I said that?
No, I try. I really
Are you try? My God, are you kidding?
My very best.
This
I'm
is
on
your.
The stage.
This is your reason, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's my reason for being.
I know it, and we can see it on stage. Is anything else coming up for you that you know about?
Yes.
Oh yes, tell me.
I am here at West Coast for the rest of this year.
Really?
I will be in The Wiz.
Yes.
And back in Black Nativity as
wow.
the Archangel. I'm really excited about that,
mm-hmm.
both of those. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful city, beautiful theater. And I'm still exploring. I'm still taking leaps of faith.
Yes, you're still putting one foot in front of the other, right?
I am. I actually put all of my things in storage in Jacksonville.
Oh, my God. Congratulations.
So this is another leap. I don't know where this leap will land me.
Yeah.
But I posted on Facebook the other day something to the effect of real faith is taking a step, not knowing, but expecting there to be ground underfoot. It's a scary place, but it's where I am. I just...
Yeah, I personally believe that the most significant things we do in our lives, we do without knowing where they're going. And because that is so scary, lots of people can't and don't. So my hat's off to you. And we are so grateful that you have chosen to land here.
Ah,
so,
thank you.
You're welcome. You said you were doing theater while you were teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And you also said that you were doing community theater. So is that what you meant?
Yeah. I'd love to give them plugs.
Yeah.
I did great community theater with Stage Aurora. In
mm-hmm.
Jacksonville, Darryl Hall, who I consider a mentor. I did great theater with the Five and Dime in Jacksonville. Lee Hamby is my sweetheart.
Oh.
Consider him a mentor also. I did great work with Atlantic Beach Experimental Theater and Carol Butterly in Jacksonville, Florida. She's an amazing director. Great work. I know I'm missing some other theaters, but I've worked with many community theaters.
What's also interesting about that, you've had all those directors
right.
were acting teachers.
Exactly.
So you had a 19-year off and on acting training, essentially, you know? Okay, so having given all this time to this work, which you really have, even while you were working a day gig, right?
Yeah, because my students were my audience.
Oh, God, that's right.
And that's the days that it was hard to go, that's how I viewed them. And I felt like I was on stage every day, and I was very animated. They all loved me because I was over the top crazy.
Because you're a performer.
Right.
That's right.
We would sing. It was an experience.
Well, it was more of the same. It was just a different kind of venue.
Right.
Right? Okay. So what would you say about a life that's essentially dedicated to having an impact on an audience? Because that's what your life essentially seems to me. Through singing and performing and acting and moving well.
I think it's the ultimate gift I can offer back to God.
Ah, yes, right.
I put a quote on Facebook a year ago or so, but I put it up again the other day, where it came to me one night that I think the greatest act of worship is when you give back to God what he gave to you, and he can watch you do what he created you to do.
Wow.
I think that is the ultimate for me. Every night I take the stage, I feel like I'm saying, God, see, this is what you gave me. I offer it back.
Oh, my God.
I hope you enjoy it. I hope it makes you happy, as happy to watch it as it did for you to put it inside of me. That's genuinely what I feel inside. I feel like this is my life's work.
Yes.
It's my passion. It's what I was created to do. I know it with every fiber of my being.
This is a perfect place to stop. Thank you so much, Dara.
Thank you.
It was lovely. This is my life. This is my passion. This is what I was meant to do. This is what I was given to share. This, for me, is what it sounds like when a person is talking about being who they really are. And it is my hope, as always, that when you're listening to Tara, you're asking yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Am I doing what I was meant to do? Am I sharing what I was given to share? Am I living the life that I believe is my life? Well, if the answer is yes, yay, hooray, I'm happy for you. If the answer is no, or I'm not sure, and you want to check out whether it's possible for you to recover something you might have lost, did you have an experience early in your life, like Tara's, when she discovered that singing was what brought her alive? Did you have an experience like that and were not able to pursue it? Are there stories about you as a child that talk about things that you did or said or were that you are no longer? Are there ways of being in the world that you know you would be better off if you could, and yet you find it difficult to be? So, as I said in the opening, if you want to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com. We're going to go out on the title song of the show that Tara is in, How I Got Over. This is, in fact, Mahalia Jackson singing How I Got Over. And so, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show, something that you didn't know that you know now, something that intrigued you, something that inspired you, something that tickled you, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too. And now here is Mahalia Jackson telling us how she got over.
How I got over. How did I make it over? You know my soul back in wonder. How did I make it over? How I made it over, going on over. back and wonder, how did I make it over? Tell me how we got over, Lord. Had a mighty hard time coming all over. You know my soul, look back and wonder, how did we make it over? Tell me how we got over, Lord. I've been falling and rising all these years, but you know my soul, look back and wonder, how did I make it over? But soon as I can see Jesus, the man that died for me, man that bled and suffered, and he hung on Calvary, and I want to thank him for how he brought me, and I want to thank God for how he taught me. Oh, thank my God, how he kept me. I'm gonna thank him cause he never left me. Then I'm gonna thank God for old time religion. And I'm gonna thank God for giving me a vision. One day I'ma join the heavenly choir, and I'ma sing and never get tired. And then I'm gonna sing somewhere around God altar, and I'm gonna shout all my trouble over. You know I've got to thank God, thank him for being so good to me. How I made it over, I had to cry in the midnight hour, coming on over. But you know my soul, look back and wonder, how did I make it over? Tell me how I made it over, Lord, Lord, Lord. Falling and rising all these years, you know my soul, look back and wonder, how did I make it over? I'm gonna wear a diamond gown in that new Jerusalem. I'm gonna walk the streets of gold. It's in that homeland of the soul. I'm gonna view the host in white. They've been traveling day and night, coming up from every nation. They hung their way to the great condition, coming from the north, south, east, and west. They hung their way to a land of bread. And then we're gonna join the heavenly choir. You know we're gonna sing and never get tired. And then we go sing somewhere around God altar. And then we go to shout all our trouble over. You know we got to thank God. Thank you for being so good to me. You know, I come to thank God this evening. I come to thank him this evening, you know, all night long. God kept his angel watching over me. And early this morning, God told his angel, God said, touch her in my name. God said, touch her in my name. I rose this morning, I rose this morning, I rose this morning.
feel like shouting. I just got to thank God. I just got to thank God. I just got to thank God. I just got to thank Him. Thank God for being so good. God being good to me.
See, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go. From the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten